You're listening to the number one games audio podcast on iTunes. This is Game Theory, episode 4 for the week of April 16. Hello, my name is Colin Campbell. I'm here with co-host Gary Witter and with producer Jeremy Williams. Hi, guys.
Greetings.
Hello.
Later on in the show, we have Professor Patrick Markey here. He's a professor of psychology at Villanova University in Pennsylvania. He's been doing some work on the violence in video games, how that affects people, and he's got some interesting things to talk about. We're also going to be talking to a guy called Tom Felicis. He's organizing the Nordic Game Conference in Sweden early next month. That sounds terribly dull, but actually they've got some pretty interesting speakers there, so that's worth hearing. And we'll be talking about the news this week, including why EA is cozying up with a Dutch TV company, the BBFC report on gamer habits, why executives are getting more and more frightened of user-generated content, and those Sony job cuts. But after the break, we'll be talking to Professor Markey. Okay, first of all, before we start talking about this, I want to just quickly talk about the Virginia Tech shooting that happened earlier on this week. We invited Professor Markey onto the show before that happened. Already we've been hearing a connection or an alleged connection between that shooting and between video games. We've just, the murderer has just been identified, and I'm sure that at some point there's going to be some conjecture about his interest in video games or whatever. He's a 23-year-old college student. I don't doubt that he owns some games. But I just want to make it clear that Professor Markey isn't here as a result of the shooting or necessarily to talk about that, although obviously we may get onto that. Professor Markey, thanks very much for joining us.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Your work, I was having a look at it earlier on the internet, is a bit different from some of the other research we've seen into violence in video games. Tell us how it's different.
Well, I mean, you probably have to think about what, in general, the research has been examining violence and aggressive behavior and things of that sort. And in general, what people tend to think of is they just are curious, does violent video games cause aggression? But that's really much too simple of a question to ask, in that when you look across studies, so there's been, you know, almost 100 studies done examining violent video games and aggression, and when you look across them all, there's almost no question at all that violent video games do cause aggression. It's so clear. You have to be dishonest not to see it. However, and this is a huge however, is that it's not as if this is a light switch that either video games do or do not cause aggression. You have to think of, well, how strong is that effect? And what surprises most people is usually people who talk about violent video games causing aggression and so forth is they assume it has a really big effect, even those that are behind it. But really what we find from research is it actually has a very tiny effect. And so in general what we find is video games do cause aggression, but the effect is very, very small. And what our research kind of expands on, I should note that I did this research with a former graduate student of mine, Gary Gametti, who's now at Clemson University in South Carolina, looks at is, well, are some people more affected? In other words, is this effect size larger for some people than others? And that's really what we focus on, is how are people differently affected by violent video games?
And you believe that all comes down to their personality or their mood?
Yeah, their personality. It's a stable difference. And the main one that we find is basically it's anger. That people who are extremely angry tend to be much more affected by violent video games than people who are not angry. And of course, the opposite is true then too, that people who are not angry are virtually unaffected by violent video games. So it's both the person and, in essence, the situation, the violent video games, that kind of combine together.
How does that correlate?
Professor Markey, can I ask you, how does a study like this actually work? How do you find the participants? Who are your control groups, and what kind of processes do you put them through to arrive at these conclusions?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a very basic design that essentially you're taking half the students, college students is what we typically use. You're taking half the people and having some of them play violent video games and some of them not play violent video games. And in addition to that, you assess their anger with a simple questionnaire study. And then you assess the outcome of aggression various ways. There's different ways to assess aggression. And so we have a control group which is defined as the people playing the non-violent video games.
And how do you figure out whether someone's aggression level has risen during or after the course of playing a video game. Because I mean, I've seen some. There was a study recently which seems to suggest that it was one of these kind of anti. I mean, that was how it's perceived in the media anyway. That after playing video games, people are more aggressive, and I guess that was done by wiring them up to monitors and so forth. Is that similar to what you've been doing?
No, we don't do so much of the biofeedback stuff. And this is actually one of the big faults in video game literature, right? Is because we're not assessing aggression per se. We use proxy measures for aggression. Because due to ethical reasons, I can't, have people play video games and stick them in a room and, see if one punches the other. So rather, we have to use measurements that we know are related to later violence. And so in our lab, we do things like you give ambiguous situations. How do they interpret them? You do also set up situations where you're simulating aggression. So, for example, some of the times you'll have people think that they're shocking another person, and you can measure how much shock do they want to give a person. And so what this really means is the fact that we aren't able to directly assess aggression is the small effect size I talked about before is actually probably even smaller in the real world. So our measures are good. They're as good as can be, really, in realistic sense. But by no means are they perfect. And again, they're probably overestimating the general effect of aggression.
Do you think that a lot of the research that we've seen today is biased in order to come up with a certain conclusion?
No, not at all. In fact, I think the researchers themselves are doing good work. That Craig Anderson, who by far is the main researcher in this area, and he definitely gives across the point that he thinks video games cause aggression, but his research is very sound. It's not the researchers. It's not us, if you will. It's how that research is later used by media outlets and politicians that I think it's really this miscommunication. For example, in the general consensus among researchers is that the effect size is small, that we know the average correlation is about 0.15, which is rather small. So we've accepted that. But in the media, it's difficult to say, oh, yeah, video games cause aggression, but the effect is small, that no one wants to, it's not sexy enough. It doesn't sell newspapers and so forth. And so we only hear the front end of that, is that video games cause aggression.
I think you're absolutely right. We've spoken on the podcast before about how certain kinds of stories attract media attention more than others. It's usually seen to be the media reports the university studies which seem to they can be molded into a scaremongering story like video games will drive your kids insane, always seem to get picked up. And yet here's a study which seems to be almost coming to what I consider almost kind of a common sense conclusion, which is, well, like any kind of provocation, it really depends on who's being provoked, the reaction that you're going to get. That's not something that I think the CNNs and the Fox Newses of this world are going to be clamoring over to have you on as a talking head.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that's kind of why Gary and I got into this, was to examine it as a common sense type of view. That, and almost both sides of the argument are wrong in this, and that we know the media, overblows the results, but on the other end, a lot of times the gaming publications will be so quick to defend themselves, to say, no, there's no cause, and they'll quickly criticize research, they'll find flaws, and you know what, there's no perfect study, there's flaws in every single study ever done. But when you get enough of them saying the same thing, you have to believe it. And so the general gaming magazines will quickly, argue that, no, they don't cause it. But you know what? They're wrong. That it does cause it. They're being defensive. I understand why. But they don't have to be because they cause it. But the effect is so small, and it's affecting people differently. And that's what – it drives me crazy, actually, when I read media on both sides of the aisle, that the pro – or I guess pro isn't the right – the people that are defending violent video games and the people that are condemning them, both sides tend to kind of drive me crazy.
When you say the effect is small, what are you talking about here? People being, more aggressive when they go out driving or being less nice to waitresses? How does this manifest itself?
Well, again, that aggression has been measured all different ways. So we're just assessing general aggression. And one thing we know from research done outside of video games, so general psychological research on anger, remember these are the people that are most affected by video games, is angry people, anytime they become provoked, they're much more likely to lash out, right? It makes perfect sense. You provoke an angry person, they're going to lash out at you, whereas if you provoke a non-angry person, they're not. So if an angry person is not provoked, no big worries, really. And what we think is happening with violent video games is, in essence, when an angry person is playing the violent video game, they're being killed or what have you, and they're, in essence, being virtually provoked, for lack of a better word. And therefore, when they turn off the controller, they're much more likely to lash out at targets that aren't directly related to that provocation. So really, anything they could respond to.
So given that like I said, this does seem a fairly kind of reasoned conclusion, which is, you know, video games are not necessarily neither bad nor good. It really depends on who's playing them and how heavily people are exposed. What do you hope or think would be the takeaway from a study like this? Is this something that people should think is actionable? I mean, what can or should be done to make exposure to video games more safe? Is it better regulation? Is it better parental supervision? What do you hope people will take away from your study?
Well, a lot of this is a personal opinion on my part. So what I'm about to say isn't, you know, the scientific. We have the facts, and now the question is, how are you going to use those facts? And what I kind of hope is, I like the rating system that's here in the States, that I think it's fine. It's just like the movie system and so forth. But what I think the word needs to get put out is not that video games are bad. Because what happens is, if a parent hears that message, video games are bad, a lot of times they don't believe it or they don't think it affects their child. What they need to hear is, video games are bad if your child or you are, you know, this, angry, or whatever traits we find up later on might be related to it. Then parents might, you know, pay a little more attention to the ratings on the games themselves. So legislatively, I hope nothing's done. I just hope that getting out the information that, you know, video games can have an effect if you're this kind of person is extremely important.
Isn't it an argument that an angry person will do good by doing something that lets off a bit of steam?
That's a comment. And you know what? That's beautiful. I love this idea of kind of like this Freudian catharsis that, you know, we have these unconscious things and you just gotta let it out somehow. And it's a very common notion, right? You're always told, like, if you get upset, just punch a pillow or what have you. But one thing we know from research that's done outside of video games is, when you actually let aggression out, when you do something, it actually doesn't have that effect. In fact, it usually makes you more upset in the long run. So trust me, it'd be great if that worked out. And I've said this before, but if you're a psychologist, a clinical psychologist, wouldn't it be great if you had a person come to therapy and all you had to do is just, hey, play this violent video game for a while and it'll cure you or lower your aggression? Trust me, us psychologists would be the first to love to find something like that. The unfortunate thing is, that's just not what the data show. It doesn't lower your aggression when you're playing violent video games or doing anything aggressive in general.
Do you have any thoughts on what the real culprit is then? Where's this anger come from? Is it learned, or is it something that you're born with?
It's probably a little bit of both. That we know that there's a genetic component to it, so there's probably a bit that a person can't do about it, but there's also a part that's probably learned.
One thing that I do feel very strongly about, and I'd like to see put to rest, as I feel any kind of scientific study would be successful in doing, is the preposterous notion purported by anti-video game campaigners like Jack Thompson, that not only do video games make you aggressive, and as we see from your study, there's an argument to be made, again, based on the existing the predisposition of the person playing them, but the idea that these games actually train you to kill. By playing a game like Grand Theft Auto or Counter-Strike, you can actually become a more adept killer in real life, that it increases their hand-eye coordination and slows their heart rate, and basically this is the sort of thing that, you know, that you could use to actually become, you know, you could play these games for a long time and then go and pick up a real rifle and be an expert marksman because you've played these games. That seems to me to be completely preposterous, and I'm not sure if your study went in any of those directions.
No, we don't do that at all, and this is actually an interesting question. It's one I've tried to actually find myself on prior research. I can't find, and I could be wrong about this, I do want to be a little careful, I can't find any studies that have actually examined if off-the-shelf video games, like an Xbox 360 or whatnot, can actually increase, say, your actual shooting skills. I think these are all just theoretical ideas, so I don't think there's actually even evidence to back this up. And now, certainly, like, you know, the next argument is, well, the Army uses simulators and so forth to train soldiers. And you know what? They do, a very small proportion of the time. Typically, the simulators are, you know, airplane simulators and those for, and that. It's not off-the-shelf Xbox software. So I'm not sure if it actually really does have an effect on your ability. I can't imagine it. I'm a gamer, and I love first-person shooters, and one of my favorite tactics is to do the circle strife move. I can't imagine that being useful in real life, that, you know, if I actually had a gun trying to run around and circle somebody. So I can't imagine that this would actually correlate to...
No, in fact, that's been a popular counter-argument, just kind of as in a jokey way for people for a long time now. You never see any of these campus gunmen circle strafing or bunny hopping, because it would, or something that's actually used in a real military situation, because it would just be ridiculous and you'd probably be killed very quickly.
Right, yeah, that's what, like I said, I don't think there's any research to back up this claim. I want to be a little careful, I'm not 100% sure, but I never came across any.
What about desensitization, though? Is that a problem?
Yes. Yes, it is a problem. But you know what? It's a problem for all medium. We're certainly becoming desensitized to violence. There's no doubt about that, and video games are doing it too. And this is why I won't let, I have a 1.5-year-old and another baby due in September, and this is why I'm not gonna let my kids, you know, play violent video games. Not because I'm scared that they're gonna become these psychotic individuals, but I just don't want to desensitize them to that violence. And you can actually see this, historically through time, that, for example, the very first research done on violent video games used the extremely violent video game of Missile Command. And, you know, by today's standards, I don't think anyone considers Missile Command that violent of a game, because we've kind of become desensitized to that. And you can see it politically too, right? Remember the Night Trap issue? For me, it was for the Sega CD, and everyone got upset about Night Trap because, you know, you're killing these co-eds, or actually you aren't, these vampires were killing co-eds and so forth. If that game was released today, we wouldn't even be moved by it. I don't think it'd get any press coverage at all. And so, I mean, we are slowly becoming desensitized to violence. But again, this isn't the fault. It's not like video games are doing this. It's basically our world, our that we live in, is desensitizing us to violence.
I've got to take issue. And this is, obviously, I haven't conducted a study. I'm just talking about this purely anecdotally. And I think this probably is, it really goes to your argument that it goes down to the existing disposition of the person. I have lost count of the number of headshots that I've made in various video games. If I were to see somebody really shot in the head in front of me, I don't feel like my reaction to that would be in any way insulated by years of playing video games. I'm sure I'd be physically sick and deeply disturbed by it. I don't think as a career-long video game player, I would be any more desensitized to that than the next guy.
I think you're absolutely right, but you're going to an extreme circumstance that I think, you know, of course, any of us, I think, who saw something that violent would be extremely disturbed by it. So we're not talking, that's another issue with video games, is instantly you take video game research and people tend to take it to the highest level, right? Does it cause someone to shoot someone? Does it cause someone to not be desensitized to someone being shot? And we're not really talking about that in our literature. I don't know any studies that have actually looked at, do video games make you shoot somebody? We're just looking at, you know, changes in aggressive levels and so forth. So this isn't, again, it's not a huge effect, even the desensitization. But I mean, you know, it does seem like we certainly are becoming desensitized to violence, and I can't imagine video games not having an effect. Again, though, this is more of a philosophical argument than a scientific argument. So you might be right.
Is the desensitization that you're talking about long-lasting, or is it just over the period of 10 minutes after you finish playing a video game?
Again, this isn't part of our research. This is more philosophical, you know, musings, if you will. And my guess is it's long-lasting. But again, it's the world we live in. It's not a black eye for video games. It's a black eye for basically all the media that we're exposed to. And video games just happen to be one of them. I'm not saying being desensitized causes you to be more violent or anything along those lines. It just makes us not get as upset in general when we see violence.
Okay, Professor Markey, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Okay, you can find out more about Professor Markey's studies if you go to our website, gametheoryshow.com. We'll have a link there later on today. After the break, we're going to be talking about this week's news. He was an excellent guest, very interesting. The Virginia Tech shooting has already impacted with video games. I think within a few hours of this terrible news coming through, we saw a familiar pundit on Fox News talking about this. I actually didn't believe it until I saw the video on YouTube, Gary, which you pointed me towards. What did you think of that?
Well, one of the great things about, I guess, like the guy we just had on is that, you know, he's reasoned and sees both sides of the equation and isn't one of these kind of reactionary talking heads that are so quick to pop up in the immediate aftermath of tragedies like this to push their own agendas. Jack Thompson, who of course is a long time enemy of the video game industry and has been spouting preposterous rhetoric about the evils of video games for some time now, was on Fox News yesterday while, you know, the campus was still being cleared and everyone was in shock, and wasted no time in kind of anecdotally linking this to video games and talking about previous school shootings where video games had allegedly been linked. And while not saying outright, because of course it was impossible, nobody even knew who this kid was at the time that Jack Thompson was on air, and that's kind of what's all the more ridiculous, that he was, I felt, he was kind of subtly trying to make trying to connect this to that and kind of assuming that this kid was going to turn out to be some kind of video game addict. Now, the sad thing is, well, one of the trivially sad things in light of the whole thing is that this, you know, is a South Korean tech university college student. When they go through his dorm, they probably are going to find a video game or two, because it's pretty normal at that level. I'm sure that isn't anything to do with what drove him crazy, but that doesn't stop people like Jack Thompson using the tragic and senseless deaths of more than 30 young people to basically get on air and spout his on his soapbox again, without any evidence at all suggest that video games were linked in this incident. So I just think that's sick and appalling.
Yeah, it's completely inappropriate, and I think it will be strange if when the cops go into this guy's apartment and they don't find any video games or any violent movies or any aggressive modern music, because that's what, you know, normal, quote, 23-year-olds consume. That's what they do with their time. So I don't really know. Even if there was a link, even if they said, oh yeah, this guy's got 5 or 6 video games, I don't really know what we'd learn from that. I think it's pretty awful that Jack Thompson has already been on the television trying to spout his views. And I suppose it's the news media as well. When something horrible like this happens, they have to fill their airtime. They're not going to give over time to something that's relatively trivial. And so they'll dig out all of these talking heads to talk about whatever it is that their favorite subject is.
That's part of the problem when you have this kind of rolling news coverage, is that they have to constantly fill the airtime. And in a situation like this, when there's so little actual information, to report, they either keep repeating the same stuff, which is one thing they do, or they have people on who have very little to say. Oh, we have a student here via cell phone. Well, what did you see? Nothing. I'm watching CNN. I'm learning what went on here from your station, and it's all kind of ridiculous. And then you get people like Jack Thompson, who was plugged on Fox News as an expert on school shootings. I don't know quite what makes him an expert on school shootings. I guess because he says he is. But you know, they asked him actually a fairly open question, which was, you know, what are you learning about what's coming out of this? And he just, you know, went into what almost felt like a prepared script of, well, in Columbine they found Doom, and in Germany this kid had Counter-Strike. But you know, it has nothing to do with what's going on here. It shocks me that someone like him can't even wait 24 or 48 hours to have the identity of the shooter made public, and to get some information about what was going on. And you know, they have a note now they didn't have yesterday that maybe shows some insight into some of the reasons for what happened here. So far, video games have not been mentioned by anyone other than people like Jack Thompson, who can think about nothing else.
The trouble with Jack Thompson is he's not very smart. I mean, video games needs critics. It needs smart people to take us to task, to analyze us, to pull us up and say, this is right, this is wrong, this is questionable. And he is not the right guy for that job, I don't think. And he, you know, here's another example this week where the taxpayers of Louisiana have had to pay back the games industry $100,000. Because of legislation, foolish legislation, prompted by Thompson or aided by Thompson, which the judge was appalled when he threw it out. He couldn't understand why taxpayers' money had been wasted on this unconstitutional attempt to fine retailers for selling video games to minors. And so the guy has a really poor track record.
I think, just getting back to the original subject, it is a shame when someone like Professor Markey comes up with a study like this that does seem to be completely unbiased and completely, well, kind of middle of the road in a way, and that's precisely what's going to doom it, I think, sadly, is that this is not the sort of thing that the media are interested in covering, especially right now when, you know, they're in a very, kind of heightened mode, and they're looking for big beats. You know, if this study had come out and had been quite damning of video games, in the light of what's happened yesterday, this would be all over the news. As it is, this is probably, you know, it's always the kind of the more well-reasoned studies that don't have sensational bullet points, but which are probably closer to the truth, that don't get covered.
Well, that's right. I mean, people are sensible. There's a report here from the British Board of Film Classification, which is a very sober, old organisation, and they've come up with 10 or 12 bullet points about how people react to video games. It's all stuff that we already know, that that males like to play for a long time, and negative press coverage has an adverse effect, and that violence creates tension and challenges and a sense of vulnerability in players. I'm reading now from the report. But the vast majority of gamers just simply reject the notion that they are adversely affected by playing them in any demonstrable way. And I think all of us would agree with that. That you'd have to be a pretty unhinged person to be affected in a really drastic way by a video game, by a book, by a poem, or by a television advert, or anything else that you watch.
Look, if I think what makes most sense about the that guy's study, the original professor we had on earlier today, is that he said something which feels almost kind of like, why did you even need to do a study? This feels like common sense, that it really comes down to the predisposition of the person that's being exposed to this stimulus. If you bump into me kind of shoulder to shoulder as we pass on the street, I'm just going to say, oops, sorry, because I'm quite a, I'm not a very aggressive person. I'll be like, oh, sorry, I bumped into you, even if it wasn't my fault, and just move on. If you bump into a guy who is just by naturally kind of has anger management issues, maybe a fight will start. That doesn't mean that there has to be some kind of rule about a circumference of radius around everyone on the street so that, you know, the few aggressive people won't be provoked into fights or something ridiculous like that. It's pure common sense. People that are kind of unhinged or more inclined to aggression are going to be more affected by aggressive stimuli. But because there's no hard and fast rule of how to regulate that or to figure out how to kind of action that, what are you going to do?
Okay, let's change the subject. After the break, we're going to talk about Electronic Arts and their deal with Endemol, the Dutch television company. So Electronic Arts announced a deal this week with the television production company Endemol. They're best known for Big Brother, Deal or No Deal, and a reality show called The Farm, which was shown in the UK and featured a woman pleasuring a pig at one point. So a pretty unusual company. They're going to be connecting video game interactivity and entertainment with those television game show franchises. Gary, do you fancy yourself on Deal or No Deal?
Yeah, I like this idea. I think I actually was going to write off to go on Deal or No Deal, but I don't think they seem to be looking for very crazy personalities right now. And also I don't think I'd have the gumption to play the game to its highest level, because obviously there's a lot of sphincter tightening moments later on in the later stages of that game. But I love the idea of taking these franchises that people obviously already have huge brand recognition and finding ways to make them, playable through your existing game system. Obviously we don't really know how the execution's going to work. This thing called Virtual Me, which seems to involve creating your own avatars, seems to maybe have a little bit of crossover with what Sony is doing with PlayStation Home. I'm not sure how those things are going to fit together. It's a little early to say. But this seems to be generally the direction where things are going now, with closer identification between you and your console. Nintendo obviously started this with the Wii and the Mi channel, and PlayStation Home now seems to be pushing in a more sophisticated version of that direction. And now it seems like EA are taking a similar idea and leveraging it with these existing big network TV brands. So I think it's exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of it.
It's interesting that so far the whole interactive TV thing hasn't really taken off. About 3 or 4 years ago, it was really huge, the red button stuff where you could play along with TV shows. That hasn't really happened, and the revenue has come from traditional DVD or video games based on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or whatever. But now that you've got these virtual communities like Xbox Live and PlayStation Home, there's nothing to stop these franchises being taken into those universes and people enjoying them, playing along, either for prizes or just for fun. So yeah, I agree. I think this could be really good, and it's smart of EA to get in on this, to have spotted this straight away, and to have seen the potential for bringing those game shows into a new environment.
I can remember I used to be quite hooked to playing Jeopardy online, just the web browser version of Jeopardy. It was a lot of fun, and they had little high score tables, and that was just in a web browser. And there's a lot of games like that online right now that you can play and have fun with. This obviously has the potential to take that to the next level with a closed system. You're playing it in your living room on your TV set, so it feels more like, you know, a real version of the TV show that you're playing, and they're going to have greater assets, you know, greater ability to make this look more like the real thing that you're playing. And of course, what ultimately really all seems to be going towards is just a massive tidal wave of movement towards casual games right now. Casual games are just becoming absolutely huge, not just through Xbox Live Arcade, but and handhelds and everything that's going on there. But this just seems to be the latest attempt after Nintendo with the Wii have brought in, you know, massive new demographics of people through their casual gaming technologies to just make gaming bigger than it's ever been, and that can only be a good thing.
Because we all like casual games, even though we're supposed to be hardcore gamers. I saw you on Quarter to Three this week, Gary, talking about Peggle. Is that what it's called? The new PopCap?
Yeah, and it's, you know, I take issue with the notion that being a hardcore gamer, you have to be kind of one thing or the other. This week, the two games that I've been playing the most are Command & Conquer 3, which I would consider a hardcore game in the sense that the vast majority of people who only play casual games, they wouldn't have a clue where to get started with a game like that because it uses some very sophisticated ideas. But I've also been playing Peggle a hell of a lot. And, you know, if something is fun, I don't think the level of complexity really factors into it. Some things are fun because they do engage you on a very deep and sophisticated level, like the kind of the strategies and tactics that are involved in an RTS game. But something can also just press a button on a much more fundamental level with something like a game like Peggle, which PopGap have released, and now it's got a lot of people hooked. You know, if it's fun, it's fun, and I don't think the sophistication enters into it. It's just that what I think Nintendo and companies like EA are now starting to figure out is that you're much more likely to hit a huge audience with a game that anyone can understand. You know, Command & Conquer will sell, you know, a couple of million copies, but I imagine that a version, an interactive, TV downloadable version of Deal or No Deal would potentially hit a much bigger audience because everyone can understand that right away, and it's not something you need any gaming chops to be able to get into.
Do you think you could actually enjoy playing Deal or No Deal without any money? It seems a bit like drinking alcohol-free lager.
Yeah, that is a problem, isn't it? You know, something like, for example, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? That's a game that you can enjoy a lot at home, just because the fun is in the trivia and you know, whether or the challenge of whether or not you know the answers to the questions, and the fact that the money is not really there doesn't really make much of a difference. With something like Deal or No Deal, it's just purely luck, and you open boxes with money, and there's no skill or challenge level really involved other than the level of risk that you're willing to take on. So I don't know. I mean, I guess the other way to go would be to find some way to actually have, you know, prizes or something, but then you get into gambling territory and it becomes very very dodgy.
Another part of this wave that EA are taking advantage of is user-generated content. And there was a report out today where 57% of executives saw user-generated content as a top three threat to their business. A quarter said they were unsure of the benefits to their business, whereas I think an optimistic 68% said they felt sure they would get profits from it. But 30% saw it as some sort of a fad, user-generated content as a fad. Surely not. Surely that's crazy talk.
That's insane. User-generated content is a huge driver in this industry. Just ask anyone who's ever played a Half-Life or a Counter-Strike or a Quake mod. I mean, I think where they're considered a fad is that they don't necessarily generate revenue for companies, and it's hard to see how they do unless, you know, you take, you know, some of the best maps and put them in a box and sell them. Obviously, people that run software companies for a living are really thinking about this just in terms of what money it's bringing in. But of course, you know, maybe where they're being a little bit short-sighted is in how they extend the lifespan and the longevity and the continued user awareness of these games. If people are continuing to make maps for a game like, you know, Warcraft or Quake, then that keeps the game in the public eye and keeps refreshing it in the eyes of gamers up until the point when a new game comes out. These games aren't going stale because the users are keeping them alive. And I think, although that's a hard thing to see, you know, on a balance sheet, on a spreadsheet, it's clearly a good thing for game publishers that are looking to keep their brands valid.
Yeah, the successful companies are spending a lot of money on this in order to get people on side. Whether that be Microsoft or Google or whoever, they realize that in the age of big community brands, you have to be able to offer creative people outlets to be creative. And it's nuts to me that 30% of executives, I'm not sure if these are media executives or just regular executives, just don't see this. After the break, I'm going to be talking to a guy called Tom Felicis. He's organizing a shindig early next month called the Nordic Game Fest Conference, which is taking place in Malmo, Sweden. It's quite a big event. They've got some pretty good guests coming on. I asked him what it was all about.
So the program exists because of a political interest in the cultural aspects of games, and specifically the Nordic cultural aspects of game development. And the cultural ministers have realized that there is actually a cultural value on the same level as television and film in supporting the games industry.
Is this created in order for the greater good of culture in the area, or is there a financial payoff at the end?
Yeah, it's created specifically and exclusively for the greater good of the member states of the Nordic Council. There's no, I don't know what the payoff would be. Of course, there's a realization that it's also, there are other aspects. You support an industry that also creates jobs and that kind of thing. But that's not the number one priority. The number one priority is much like film and television support in the Nordic region. Support for a cultural expression that specifically can be considered Nordic. I mean, the main concern was not, and is not, to make sure that DICE keeps making Battlefield. The main concern is to make sure that there are quality games produced in, for example, Nordic languages for Nordic children and young people in the future. There is a fear that maybe the industry could disappear completely from the Nordic region, and there won't be any locally produced games left with some kind of Nordic roots. And that doesn't mean Vikings. It just means a content that's created with the cultural concerns of the region in mind when it's created. The revenues of the games industry, they're larger than both the film and the music industry in the Nordic region. You're developing products for an international audience that are then localized. And there are a lot of success stories in the Nordic region, and these games are being consumed. I mean, the population of the Nordic region is not that much, but they're being consumed everywhere. I mean, from here to Japan.
Why are you guys good at this stuff? I mean, why are you better than, say, the Italians or the Greeks? What is it about the Nordic region that is producing this good work that's eminently exportable?
Generally speaking, the level of quality has always been high and internationally oriented. I mean, export oriented. I mean, I think the oldest film corporation in the world, Nordic Film, was established in Copenhagen. This is an area that has a long tradition of producing entertainment for a global audience. You can go back to ABBA, for example. I mean, there's in the 70s. I mean, there's always been things coming out of the Nordic region with contemporary global appeal. It's pretty natural that the region has also been successful in exporting its games products. And then, there's also a tradition of high technology and that kind of thing in the region. There's a strong entrepreneurial tradition, especially in countries like Denmark. So it's been quite a natural process. The interest in the sciences and mathematics and programming, some of the first internet, like Sunnet and things like that in Sweden. I mean, there's always been there was a high technology interest, and there's been that kind of interest for at least the last 30, 25 years.
What's going to tempt an executive from North America or Japan to get on a plane and come on over to this conference?
What would be most appealing for a visitor, an executive, for example, flying in from North America or Japan, is simply, I mean, I can quote Daryl Steele from NVIDIA. I mean, they feel that the Nordic region is producing the most creative and innovative games, especially in the personal computer area, of any region in the world.
He's got a point about some great games coming out of those countries. You look at developers like IO, Avalanche, Simbin, Funcom, Remedy, some really good games coming out of there. And, of course, we've got DICE as well, the Battlefield franchise.
from as long as I can remember, when I first got involved in gaming back in the late 80s, when it was the kind of the end of 8-bit and the beginning of the transition to 16-bit, you know, Finland and Sweden and Norway, those guys are always doing some of the most interesting work. Certainly on the technical side, Jeremy's someone who follows the demo scene and knows as well as I do that it's often these guys that really are the pioneers of a lot of very, very cool technical stuff and are very creative on the game design side as well. It does make me wonder why. I don't know what it is about these kind of Scandinavian countries that seem to engender such a hotbed of game development. Maybe because it's so bloody cold outside that all you can really do is stay inside and make games.
Yeah, I think it's bloody cold, but also they are pretty good at communicating with the rest of the world. They all speak English. They have a massive broadband internet penetration. I think they've got one of the highest percentages of math and physics graduates in the world. So that's where you would expect video game development to come out of. Okay, thanks very much to all our listeners for listening in this week. We're going to be back next week, as always. You can get us on iTunes, or you can get us on the web at GameTheoryShow.com. You can also send us an email with your opinions or your questions to GameTheoryShow@gmail.com. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you next week.